I go back to 1973, 74. You know, whatever letter my dad or number of my dad's license plate, he can only get gas on certain days of the week. You know, I can remember sitting in lines for an hour and a half. You know, we walked through Iran in the late 70s. I was a senior in high school. The Iranian Revolution with the hostages, things like that. All the wars in the Middle East. We just keep going back to, are they really our friends? Is Saudi Arabia our friend? Is Kuwait our friends? We keep propping them up, and they only have one gross national product, and that's energy. We've been propping them up for a half a century, but we continue to do the same stupid things. Before Venezuela fell 15 years ago, Venezuela was our number one importer into America.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential, and here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thanks for being with us for another episode of American Potential. We appreciate you being with us and joining us. Reliable and affordable energy. That's what we're going to talk about today. That's long been a staple for Americans. But as we see costs begin to rise across the United States, the question becomes, what is driving this inflation? One contributor to rising prices is the cancellation of oil and gas leases by the Biden administration. And they don't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. So how does canceling these leases not only contribute to energy price hikes and higher prices at the pump, but also how does it impact those who work in our energy sector? Well, our guest today brings over 25 years of experience in the energy industry, witnessing firsthand the shifts that have been made over the years. And initially, he was involved in coal. He transitioned to natural gas, where he founded his own business in 2008. He's been a part of the largest coal prep plant ever built and saw the first natural gas well be drilled in Pennsylvania. I want to welcome Mark Caskey, the founder of Steel Nation and president of the American Oil and Gas Alliance, to the show. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. I mean, I'm so interested in this topic. We've done several shows on this topic, the whole energy sector, because government's messing it up, and we'll get into that in a minute. But let's talk about Steel Nation. You're the founder of Steel Nation. What does your company do?
We design and build gas processing plants, compressor stations, metering stations, anything to do with energy, especially on the petroleum and natural gas side. We're located just outside of Pittsburgh. Just south of Pittsburgh, which I call the Paris of Appalachia.
okay.
we're dead in the center of the Marcellus Shale and also the Utica Shale, which is closer to Ohio and Michigan. It's really the biggest gas find in the world, including anywhere in Texas and most of the Middle East. There's more natural gas under our feet here than we know about anywhere else. The first horizontally fracked well was done in 2006, about 8 miles from where I live, about 8 miles from where I sit right here at our headquarters. And, I started the company about a year and a half after that initial drilling was done to the Renz well, R-E-N-Z. So it's been a great almost 16 years. We've done about 320 million worth of construction all around here. We do work in Texas, Oklahoma, Wyoming, a little bit in Oklahoma, big time in Utah, out in Idaho and some of the other South Dakota, those energy producing states as well. Majority of our work is here, though, probably 75% in Appalachia.
Gotcha. Now tell us the story behind the name Steel Nation.
So you've probably heard of the Pittsburgh Steelers, right?
Yes. Yeah, I've heard of them. I think I've heard of them.
I graduated from high school in 1980. At that point, the Steelers had won four Super Bowls from the time I was in seventh grade. So, yeah. You know, growing up a Steeler fan, it was a pretty easy choice. steel, you know, we're in the steel business. We design and build pre-engineered metal buildings or steel buildings. And when I thought about starting my own, it's the first name that came to my mind. I wrote the Rooney family that owns the Steelers a nice letter asking them for permission, and did get a nice letter back from Dan Rooney saying, please, we wish you all the best. And it's interesting, our the Rooneys did ask that we don't follow the black and gold colors. So I actually selected, I don't know if you can see this or not. Our corporate colors are purple, and our most hated rivalry is the purple Baltimore Ravens. So there's no problem with patent rights and things like that. We did pick purple, and I do love purple.
That's right. Well, that's great. What a great story. Well, let's talk about the energy industry. You've seen it change a lot over the years. We talked about some of the different sectors that you were in, started off in coal and moved to different sectors of the energy industry. How much have you seen the industry change?
You know, it's I really have to go back to, 1980. I graduated high school and all the steel mills closed in Pittsburgh. We gave all of our steel making technology away to India, Korea, Japan, all of our allies, all through the through Europe. Even though steel isn't an energy, I got to live through that downfall. That was strike one, and then I worked for a company that we really specialize in coal prep plants all across the nation. And by 2008, Hillary and Obama were running, they promised West Virginia that they were going to shut down coal, and they did. And here I had strike two against me, so what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I'm a young man. That's about when the horizontal fracturing, it did come to Pennsylvania. So I've seen excitement. I made it through the Arab embargoes of 1973 and 1974. I could see the scarcity of petrol at that time. I could see natural gas. My dad complaining about, how much it was to heat our house back in, 1973, 74, because everything went up at that time. To have two strikes against us here in Appalachia, and in Appalachia, I hold near and dear to my heart. All the coal and the coke that was mined out of West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, and then sent up to Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh made all the steel. We basically built the world, and not just Pittsburgh, Cleveland, the Rust Belt towns, Rochester, New York, Buffalo, New York, Toledo, Ohio, to a point, Cincinnati, Ohio, Binghamton, New York. We really did build America, and we built the world. And so when that, the strike against steel and the strike against coal, and now here I am 30 years later looking at what's happening to the war on fossil fuels, which includes natural gas, the most abundant, the most natural, the most economical fuel that we have, and the war on fossil fuels. I'm not going to let strike three happen, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I want to talk about that. I mean, this is government, government picking winners and losers. And we saw that. You talked about Hillary Clinton and former President Obama talking about shutting down coal in West Virginia, and that they were serious about it, and that they did it. They're pretty serious about this whole idea of government picking winners and losers in the energy sector. Your thoughts on that?
So you initially started talking about closing down public lands on President Biden's first day in office. He signed 103 executive orders shutting down so many things in the energy business, not just natural gas, petroleum, nuclear, everything that our previous administrations, even back to the Obama years, had passed. And this all happened in Joe Biden's day one in office. And, we often hear that the Keystone Pipeline was among those. That wasn't the only pipeline. It was many pipelines. All the public lands that are owned by us, the people, The government now treats that as they own that land. No, we own that land, and it's wide open space is perfect for mineral extraction. There's a reason that we call this natural gas. It's naturally occurring, and it's naturally occurring throughout the world. The question is how easy or how hard it is to extract those minerals from the ground. And where we're at here in Appalachia, it's fairly easy because it's not as deep as in some places in the world. But yet, when government starts picking winners and choosers or selects winners and losers, well, that was a tongue twister there. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
Let's look at California. In 10 years, there will be no combustion engines, vehicles and trucks or passenger cars in California. And they want to do that, get rid of our diesel trucks that haul all of our goods, all the big tractors that run and take care of our food. And we're going to replace these with technologies, battery technologies that aren't even close to being there yet. But yet we're going to mandate that for 10 years. It's absolute insanity. And the thing that we're seeing now, not only the abandonment of drilling on U.S. land, on public lands, now we're seeing it's gone further than where FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is now. It's almost impossible to get a pipeline approved anymore.
Right.
What we saw 3 weeks ago, the Biden administration put a pause on LNG, which is simply liquid natural gas. Thankfully, we did have LNGs that we could ship to Europe when Putin invaded Ukraine 2 years ago.
Right.
You know, energy has been used as a weapon for a century now, or probably a century and a half.
Yeah. Mark, though, it seems like the energy today, our government is using it as a weapon against Americans, because quite honestly, yep. Other countries are producing energy and they're getting the market share, and we are shutting that market down in the United States to producers here. And by the way, we produce it in a much more clean fashion across all energy sectors. I believe the United States has the best technology. We produce it the cleanest. And we're shutting that down so that despots around the world and enemies around the world can sell energy that the world needs.
I go back to 1973-74. Whatever letter my dad or number of my dad's license plate, he can only get gas on certain days of the week. You know, I can remember sitting in lines for an hour and a half. We walked through Iran in the late 70s. I was a senior in high school. The Iranian Revolution with the hostages, things like that. All the wars in the Middle East. We just keep going back to, are they really our friends? Is Saudi Arabia our friend? Is Kuwait our friends? We keep propping them up, and they only have one gross national product, and that's energy. We've been propping them up for a half a century now. But we continue to do the same stupid things. Before Venezuela fell 15 years ago, Venezuela was our number one importer into America. Where's Venezuela? Went from being the richest country in South America to the poorest country in less than 1 year when mm-hmm. Chavez took that over and nationalized. I have a lot of clients that had assets that were refining petroleum and natural gas in Venezuela. When that took over, they lost billions of dollars, and they'll never get that back. But the whole idea of propping up other nations when we have all this energy right at our fingertips, and like you said, we are the best at extractions. We do it clean. Take nuclear for example. We created nuclear energy in America. It wasn't created in France or any parts of the earth, and we did it well, and we still do it very well. But we'll never see another nuclear plant. We know that,
right?
know, so.
Yeah. So, you know, and we talk about the cost of regulation. These regulations have a cost to them. They certainly have a cost to them, to the industry itself, but they also have a cost to average Americans, right? And I always talk about that single mom who now has to pay more for energy because of these bad government decisions that are driving up the cost of energy. How much does regulation cost the industry? How does it affect the price of energy to the consumer?
I don't know if I could put a dollar figure on it, but I'm guessing probably a good 25 to 30% of it.
Right.
In paperwork. You know, we have the Pennsylvania DEP or West Virginia DEP, the federal EPA. They're on these well sites with us, on these compression sites, processing plants, making sure we do everything by the book. And we do everything by the book. We don't really need them to stand over our shoulder. But, you know, we're friendly enough with them. So they're there all the time. And there's certain regulations that are double, triple the work, the reporting, the paperwork that is involved. That does take us a lot of time. Probably 25 to 30% premium on just some of the over regulations that we see.
Yeah. What are some of the executive orders and the regulations that you think this administration, President Biden, and his administration have done to impact the oil and gas industry?
The first one was really, and the first number one was the Keystone. The Keystone pipeline was bringing, we always hear how dirty the tar sands of Canada were. The tar sands of Canada produced very, very strong oil that could, we're shipping it down into the southern states of Texas, Louisiana, eventually where it was supposed to go, and refining it there, and ultimately for export. That was a major killer right there. These lines were done. It went through many, many different Indian reservations. They were happy with it. They were making money on it. Contrary to popular belief, you know, we did see the one uprising. The uprising wasn't by the reservation. It was outside activists that were really causing that. So everybody was happy with that. And the whole idea that all you could read about at that time was how dirty the tar sands were. The tar sands are no dirtier than the oil that we're producing in the Gulf of Mexico, or anywhere else in the world. It was just yet another lie. This is some of the things that we see are setbacks, you know, from streams. You know, we drill right next to rivers and streams all the time. We never have problems. You might have that one unseen problem that you have, and you know, a few hundred gallons got into a creek. We solve those problems immediately. But the pushback against certain areas of the United States, mainly on coastal areas and rivers, that it sounds good. You know, environmentally, it sounds perfect. There's really no need for it. That's probably the second biggest thing that has set us back.
Right. Now, one thing the Biden administration did at the end of January, and you mentioned this, was announced a temporary pause on the export of liquid natural gas, or LNG, to certain countries. How's that going to affect Americans?
You know, we are still the number one exporter, thankfully, right now. It hasn't gone down a lot yet, but there's about 10 different plants, and Jeff, I'm sorry. Where are you at geographically?
I'm in Colorado. I live in Colorado, a state that you didn't mention when you talked about some of the places that you do business. And there's a reason for that. The government of Colorado went to war with the oil and gas industry a few years ago. And, you know, you've got states like Wyoming just to the north of Colorado that are reaping the benefits of oil and gas exploration. And then Colorado suffers and doesn't have it. But anyway,
I think it was a Freudian slip because we did a massive processing plant out in Greeley outside of Denver, and it took 5 years to get the permits for that one. You know, we had the protesters out there. It was the cleanest, most environmentally, the quietest, the safest, one of the safest and quiet that we ever built in our history. And we built hundreds and hundreds of these into the thousands now. And you're right, Ed, that after learning the politics of, and there's something new going on there where locally they want to outright do away with oil and gas, period, which is very current in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's insanity for government to try and force these solutions. Let's just talk about that for a second. You know, government thinks that by waving some magic wand, we can just say, well, here's where we are today. And tomorrow, you know, we want zero emissions. Well, it's easy to say that. It's just not possible. The market can't react to a bunch of politicians saying that we want it so it's going to be so the next day. I mean, there is a reality to this, and that is the difference there between reality and what politicians want is inflation. It is driving up the cost of energy for Americans, right?
Yep. Yeah, I see these memes going around on social media. We were less than $2 on President Trump's last day in office. Right. You know, here in Pennsylvania, we're $3.69 for gas, almost double.
Right.
The price of natural gas just to heat my home has gone up at least 35-40%. You know, you go back and who does it hurt the worst? It hurts the lower class of people, the single moms that are trying to raise two kids on their own and fill up or tank, you know, a couple times, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. You know, we talk about LNG, so I'm going to put it in more of a Pennsylvania perspective. One of the biggest ports and refineries that we ever had was in Pennsylvania. It was called Marcus Hook. Marcus Hook had a horrible fire about 10 years ago, and instead of rebuilding right away, most of the left said, let's just shut this down. At one time, there were 6,000 people working at Marcus Hook. So you have all this massive land surrounded by minority communities, you know, that could really use a help up, a hand up, not a handout, a hand up. But Pennsylvania wants nothing to do. It would be the perfect place for an LNG plant because you have all these shipping channels that could take it directly to Europe from Philadelphia. But we'll never see that happen. I served on the Pennsylvania DEP's Citizens Advisory Commission for 6 years until I was rudely fired from my opposition to RGGI, which is a whole nother story. And we'll save that for another day. But, you had something called Environmental Justice Council as part of the Pennsylvania DEP. And it was really the minority, the poor areas around all these cities, Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philadelphia mainly. And I fought for that. I said, we could reopen Marcus Hook. And boy, I had a lot of enemies when I brought that up because God forbid we would use natural gas to beef up a poor, a distraught area. So the shutdown of LNG it really hits home to me here in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. We have all the pipelines. We have two massive pipelines that run directly along the Pennsylvania Turnpike or I-70 parallel that would take it right to Marcus Hook. And we could build that LNG plant in a couple of years, but we never will because of the government.
Yeah, it is the government that's shutting down these projects, that's shutting down oil and gas exploration. And it takes a lot of capital to go in and build some of these facilities, whether it's refineries or you know, exploration infrastructure, that sort of thing.
Yep.
You want a long-term commitment if you're going to do that. And can't be subject to the political whims of politicians deciding, well, we're going to cancel the lease. We're not going to have the lease. Now we're going to have it. Now we're not. I mean, that's just not a framework that anybody who is in this business can operate under, right?
Right. And you think about it. We're going to be replaced by all these batteries made in China, lithium made in China, all these rare earths mined in China and mined in South America owned by China, all these windmills made in China. What is this going to do? What's going to happen to the Detroits of the world? Or even some of the southern auto manufacturers. We have a place here in Ohio that just went out of business. It was owned by the Chinese. It used to be a General Motors plant. That plant is over a mile long, and they were making EVs there. These things were not selling. The company is the same Chinese company that makes your iPhone, that uses slave labor in all through China to make these iPhones. They couldn't use slave labor here in near Cleveland, Youngstown, Ohio, so they had to pay people a decent wage, and it went out of business. That's going to happen over and over and over again, and we're supposed to rely. Look at all these wind farms that are being built off our coast that are going out of business. They're not American-owned companies. These are Asian companies. These are European companies. They're killing the whales. They're not producing enough electricity, and they're shutting down, and they're going bankrupt, and they're just leaving these things out there in our ocean for the next generation.
And many times they were subsidized by U.S. taxpayers because government chose that sector over oil and gas.
Exactly. Many times, all the time.
Yeah, all the time. That's right. Yep. Talk about the American Oil and Gas Alliance and what you do and what you're focused on.
So if anybody watches any news after about 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night, you see a lot of alphabet soups on American Petroleum Institute. There's many, many groups out there that try to paint a pretty picture of how clean oil and gas is, and the family holding hands and running through the clean fields and stuff like that. We have local organizations that do a really good job that are on a smaller level, statewide level, county level. What myself and the founder of the American Oil and Gas Alliance, John Gallo, started talking about a year and a half ago is we're not getting the message through. The left, the George Soros finance, the Rockefeller finance left, is we're talking $9 billion a year to fight fossil fuels. And then, of course, fossil fuels has to turn around and fight back with another $9 billion a year. At the end of the day, most of these, the alphabet soup of pro-American energy, they don't go far enough. They take it to about 80, 90%, but they don't really speak the truth on why this is going on and why the left is winning and why the Bill Gates of the world doesn't like the 6 billion humans that are on this earth. He only wants 2 billion, and how do we get rid of people and all that? And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. So we started American Oil and Gas to really tell the truth. Does it get us in trouble? Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it gets us in trouble with more conservative groups, not so much conservative groups, but groups that don't want us telling the truth. Cause it is a war. The war on American energy independence, we have to fight back like we fought against the British during the 1700s, I'm not picking on the British. Sorry.
Okay. No worries. Well, good. What else? We've got just another a minute or so here before we're out of time. But any other thoughts on, the current administration, the Biden administration, sort of war on energy? And quite frankly, I don't know any other way of putting it. It's a war on the American people.
It really is. We've seen the amount of money that was pumped in corporate welfare, social welfare, the trillions that were pumped in to build back better, and COVID made it bad, then it just got worse. I'm looking out in my parking lot and I see some of our trucks. These are $60,000 trucks. I ride a Harley Davidson. I went to look at Harleys and I knew what the prices were going to be. Harleys are now $40,000 to $50,000. EVs, the average cost of an EV is $63,000. Who can afford this?
Right.
We make a good living here in the oil and gas industry, but there's no way we can afford that. We go to the grocery store. Where does $15 a pound steaks come from? And on and on. And it's just really the not paying attention to what we need here, and we've got all these resources. I'm not a real religious guy, but why did the creator or God put all this energy under our feet? It's really under everybody's feet, but it's so easy to get to here in America. Why aren't we taking advantage of it?
All right. Well, Mark, thank you for joining us. Thanks for all you do at the American Oil and Gas Alliance and and at Steel Nation. That's great. I love the way that you founded the name. That's awesome. But thanks for all you do. We appreciate you joining us and for fighting the good fight.
And thank you guys, and appreciate all the work that Americans for Prosperity does.
You got it. All right. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, you know, this is, we've talked about this so many times. Bad government decisions by the Biden administration are causing pain to the American people. And it's that simple. We talk about inflation. We talk about Bidenomics. And the president likes to use the term Bidenomics. We use it now at Americans for Prosperity. You can go to Bidenomics.com, by the way, and you can see the real effects of the Biden economy. But inflation is driven in large part by energy. Energy is a gigantic driver of that. And again, the impact is on America's families, single moms, people who have to choose between the everyday bills that they have to pay every month, or maybe buying something that's nice for their kids. And you know what? They have to pay the bills, so the kids are the ones that don't get something nice. That's the reality of bad decisions by our government. Listen, liberty and freedom, they're easily taken for granted. Don't take liberty or freedom for granted. Go out there, defend freedom and defend liberty. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.